This is Scott Becker with Becker's Healthcare and with a special podcast of Becker's Dental Review today. I'm joined today by Bart Walker. Bart's one of the nation's leading experts in dental services organizations and sort of the business around DSOs and dentistry. Bart's also a partner at McGuire Woods in the healthcare arena and a gifted person. Bart, can you take a moment and introduce yourself, and then I'll ask you a number of questions about the DSO business and market.
Sure. Thanks, Scott, and thanks again for having me. As Scott mentioned, my name is Bart Walker. I'm a partner with McGuire Woods and our healthcare group. I'm, I think, one of the rare lifers. I've been with McGuire Woods my entire career. I've been doing this about 15 years. I went to University of North Carolina for undergrad and Notre Dame for law school. Then I started with McGuire Woods and have really, my practice has evolved towards DSOs and the dental services organization space to the point where that's really where I spend the majority of my time over the last 3 to 5 years. And appreciate Scott having me on.
Thanks, Bart. And Bart, tell us a couple of the key trends in the DSO area.
Sure. A few trends. I'd say the number one trend far and away is the influx of private equity capital into the market. I can't think of another sector that's experienced that level of investment over this short of a period of time. And as you know, the dental space is still relatively unconsolidated, and a lot of the private equity-backed platforms are playing into that. So that's A number one in terms of headline trends, and then that drives a bunch of other trends that flow from it, but that's A number one. Number two, I'd say more recently we've seen a movement towards multi-specialty practices, so not just general dentistry or pediatric dentistry, but more than that, combining general dentistry, orthodontics, periodontics, endodontics, pediatrics, kind of all into the same practice and some combination of those. So we've seen that coming down the pike more recently, although there's only a few people right now doing that in a real serious way. Third, most states have Medicaid coverage of some level and of varying degrees for dental services. Most states are moving towards a managed Medicaid model. And so there we've got providers either sharing risk or having some reimbursement at risk for the services they're providing. And we're seeing that as a really strong trend that's impacting disproportionately in both good and bad ways, the Medicaid dental platforms that are out there.
Thank you. So biggest trend would be this, the crazy amount of private equity funding going into the dental business. And then based on different states, some of those DSOs are focused on Medicaid or not Medicaid, and lots of different business going around that. And also, as you mentioned, you know, this issue of a general dentistry platform or an orthodontic platform or a pediatric dentistry platform, and sort of looking at for some of these becoming more merged or multi-specialty to cover different aspects of dentistry. Thank you. Another question, Bart. DSOs growing through mergers and acquisitions or via organic hiring or both, what do you see out there?
Yeah, a little bit of both. Mostly slanted towards the M&A side of things because it is such a highly fragmented sector right now. I think at last count, you had mentioned that something like only 10% of dentists are affiliated with the DSO at this point. And so there's still a lot of room to go to really consolidate this space. So we've seen a lot of efforts there. We've also seen some organic growth in the sense that some of the DSOs are focused on bringing dentistry to underserved areas or even setting up a shop to compete with local dentists and putting in a younger, more junior dentist, putting them into business. There's a few different business models out there on that front, but predominantly we've seen just a ton of M&A activity, especially at the lower end of the market.
Got it. So a ton of M&A activity, but then with some of the biggest DSOs, some focus on more focus on organic growth. When somebody's first PE funded or getting PE funded, a lot of effort to try and do M&A to get bigger in a hurry, and hard to do that quickly under organic, even if the organic returns can be very good. Who are some of the biggest DSOs? Just the names that should be top of mind for people interested in the DSO market.
Sure. Yeah, and just kind of off the top of my head, I mean, the biggest one is Heartland by far. And then there's a handful of other ones that are they're in that neighborhood. Great Expressions, Aspen Dental, Western Dental, Pacific Dental, American Dental Partners, Affordable Care, Interdent, DCA, Dental Care Alliance. I think all of those are really, really big platforms that have really good scale. Below that, you've kind of got a second tier of mostly private equity-backed platforms, each of which have, you know, maybe call it 20, 50, 75 locations, but that are very, very actively involved in M&A and growing very rapidly.
Thank you. Can you give me the names again of 5 to 7 of the largest, just for somebody taking notes?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I'll try to speak a little slower, too. So Heartland, Great Expressions, Aspen Dental, Western Dental, Pacific Dental, American Dental Partners, Affordable Care, and Interdent were the ones that I had mentioned.
Thank you. And then a next question, Bart. Everybody's always interested in sort of the multiples, what price dental practices are getting bought at, what that looks like. Just a couple moments on what multiples look like. Are they going up or down? Is there a scarcity of big practices to buy, driving prices up? Are prices softening? Any quick thoughts on that?
Yeah, so the influx of private equity dollars has really driven valuations up, especially for any kind of practices of scale. Some of the bigger ones on the list that I just mentioned have traded within the last 18 to 24 months, and the ones that have traded have seen multiples upwards of 12, 13, 14, 15 times, depending on kind of what creative math you're using. But the valuations there on the big, big platforms have been really, really high comparatively. The challenge is at the lower end of the market, I think you see individual dentists and small group practices seeing those multiples, and it sets the expectation in their mind that they'll get something similar to that. That's really not been the case. The one and two doctor practices that have maybe one, two, or three locations, those really usually trade at much, much lower multiples, and in fact, almost at a percentage of collections or a percentage of gross revenues rather than some multiple of EBITDA. So we've seen a couple of different trends there. One is at the top end of the market, yes, valuations are still very, very high by comparison to other sectors. But then at the lower end of the market, they're relatively steady, although we have seen just as a result of competition amongst all these consolidators out there, prices creeping up there as well.
Thank you. And another question, you've kind of answered this already. I mean, well, I guess the first question is, when you see multiples like 12 to 14, you and I think, well, we should have been dentists and should have organized a dental practice.
100%.
But I guess the reality is, it's just the big growth practices get those kind of multiples, where the 1, 2, 3 person practices get much smaller multiples. Fair statement?
Agreed. And I think that's true in a lot of other sectors. Most private equity funds, most buyers, even strategic buyers, are willing to pay for scale. And same thing in dental. There just is a much bigger lack of scale. There's really only a limited number of potential targets there.
100%. And scale also means more stability. It's not just size itself, but it's hopefully more stability, less risk of a single dentist peeling off or some problem or something like that. There's more scale if you got 100 different dentists, more portfolio diversification, et cetera. You've talked a little bit already about the impact that PE has on the business. Do you want to spend another moment on that, on what impact private equity has on the business?
Yeah, for sure. So we're seeing a ton of competition for the smaller deals. So for example, where before we'd see a single dentist-owned practice working with a business broker to transition their practice to a dentist who's just coming out of school for a relatively modest paycheck. Now we're seeing multiple private equity-backed bidders, involved in the acquisition process. So there's much, much more competition for the smaller deals. And all of the relatively big platforms have already been bought up. So that's a big impact that private equity's had. Another one that we've seen has been just a scarcity of really smart business folks with dental experience. I think there are a lot of healthcare executives who are trying to make the transition to the dental space, and some of them are doing just a really great job at it. But overall, there seems to be a lack of management talent just because historically there really has not been this great training ground for experienced executives. It's been a relatively cottage industry, not so much with professional business management.
Fantastically interesting. So you've really had a situation where a lot of the big practices are bought up, so there's more and more competition for the smaller ones, and that's part of the amount of PE that's entered the market and is after it. One last question. Your best advice for DSOs, and this could be whether in a growth mode or just generally managing the business, any couple thoughts on best advice for DSOs, Bart?
Yeah, I've got two, if that's okay. And one, I think, is kind of contrarian. And I haven't heard a lot of people saying this, but I don't think everyone should be forming a DSO. And I think that that is contrary to a lot of what you hear out there. I believe the DSO structure is a structure that's intended to solve a couple of issues. The structure itself does not create value. I think people, particularly smaller dental practices, walk into their lawyer's office, and we get calls on this all the time, that says, hey, I want to set up a DSO. They don't really fully understand the implications of that or why they really want to do it. And if there's one takeaway, I would say, you know, just merely forming a DSO does not create value. If you're a dentist in practice, you can very easily go to multi-location, you can go to multi-specialty. There's a whole host of things you can do without being a DSO. That being said, once you're a DSO, to grow it, and this is kind of takeaway point number two, is if you're looking to expand or you're looking to grow by acquisition, you really have to turn it into a process. It has to be scalable, it has to be repeatable, it has to be efficient, and it has to have a low error rate. Those are really the four key characteristics when I think about it of a really effective process-driven M&A program.
Can you give us again, just because it's always easy for people to have bullet points to take home with them, what are those four key points about really developing a DSO? You had mentioned them, but could you put them in summary form for us, those four?
Sure. In terms of putting together an acquisition process, in order to do M&A right, you need to put together a process. And when I think about it, there's really four key components to that, or four key hallmarks of a successful M&A program. They are, it's scalable, it's repeatable, there's a low error rate, and it's efficient. I think if you do those four things well, then you'll have a really good, effective M&A process.
Fantastic. I think that, Bart, is super helpful. And then, Bart, final question. If people want to reach you, I know you serve as an advisor to several DSOs, and where there's not conflicts, you still take on additional DSO clients and also huge dental practices are looking to merge and looking at private equity and those kinds of things. How can people reach you, Bart, if they want to reach you?
Sure. Call, email anytime. You can check out my bio on our firm website, McGuireWoods.com. You can email me at bwalker@McGuireWoods.com. You can always call me as well, 704-373-8923 is my direct number, and I'd be happy to speak with you anytime.
Bart, thank you again. It's amazing expertise you've built in the DSO market, and your colleagues have built, so congratulations, and just a pleasure visiting with you. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.